Welcome to episode 14 of Nuggets for Vet Nurses, where we bring bite-sized bits of clinically relevant knowledge to your everyday nurse. I'm Marcus Taylor.
And I'm Esther Fan, both Kiwis and now from both sides of the equator. We are your show hosts. Where exactly in the Northern Hemisphere are you right now, Marcus?
Well, I'm still in Jordan for now. I did almost get thrown out of the country for going into the wrong part, some restricted area that I didn't know was restricted, and being an idiot tourist and getting some guns around me. But I'll tell you guys about that later on. But before that, we wanted to cover a topic that's somewhat current in the media at the moment.
That's right. Today, we're going to be talking about brachycephalic breeds, their peculiarities, and let's be honest, their problems. It's actually an area of smallies that I've taken an unexpected interest in these last few years.
Brachy means short, and cephalus means head. So brachycephalics are flat-faced breeds, typically your pug, bulldog, and French bulldog. Why have they caught your attention so dramatically, Esther? Did you find your great-great-grandmother was like a bulldog breeder or something, or you secretly wish you could adopt five Frenchies if only your cat would share your illustrious mansion of a house?
Are you waiting to come over to my house for a visit?
That was a subtle hint. That was a subtle hint that I've never been invited over.
You might be disappointed, not just for the fact that I won't have five Frenchies there, but maybe it's not as big as you might have hoped. Oh. But my interest in brachycephalics started only about 5 years ago after I moved to Melbourne. Before that, I guess I hadn't hardly dealt with any such creatures back in country New Zealand, and I don't know if you had either. The majority of our canine patients were farm dogs with dislocated hips, GDVs, pig dogs with pig rips, or the family Jack Russell who had injured themselves trying to be a pig dog or a farm dog. And in addition, a decade ago, brachies weren't nearly as popular as they are now. I was just reading actually a paper in 2020 that reported just over 1 in 6 dogs in the UK were brachycephalic.
Wow.
That's heaps. Many factors, including celebrities and social media, of course, have led to an explosion in brachy demand. But unfortunately, this hasn't really been matched by awareness or education about their health issues and their needs. It might surprise you, but I'm into education. And so, an interest in learning about these breeds and sharing that knowledge was born.
You don't care about education, do you, Esther? I really honestly couldn't tell.
Yeah. Well, you know, this show is full of surprises. So, I am. Ta-da!
So, brachycephalics have soared in popularity, particularly in urban locations, due to their distinctive appearance, compact size, and family-friendly nature, which aren't bad things in themselves. But because of the way they've been bred, they've come with a whole host of other internal and external problems, some of which may not be recognised by owners or even veterinary staff.
It's true that there is no perfect breed, but brachies do have a much higher prevalence of problems which affect daily life. There is a whole debate about the ethics of brachy breeding and their existence, but today we're concentrating on identifying the common problems in an individual and how we, or how you nurses, can help.
So, let's start with the obvious. Brachies have short noses, which can lead to breathing problems.
Correct. We call this brachycephalic obstructive airway syndrome, or BOAS, or BOAS for short. Affected dogs have characteristic snorting when excited, snoring when sleeping, or in severe cases, almost screeching when panting, and many anatomical features can contribute to this.
Firstly, the nostrils are very narrowed. We call this stenotic nares, nares being the nostrils and stenosis meaning narrowed. This reduces the amount of air that can actually enter into the lungs via the nose.
Stenotic nares are easily corrected by surgery, nose jobs if you like. We cut a chunk out of the side of the nostril to open them up. It doesn't fix everything, but it still does help. The stitches are usually dissolvable and an Elizabethan collar must be worn so that Percy the pug doesn't scratch them out.
Secondly, the nasal turbinates, meaning the curly bones inside the nose, are squished. It's like you have the same amount of turbinates as a normal dog, but squashed only into a few centimetres of shortened skull. This means more resistance and airflow, leading to inflammation and thickening of the mucosa. This is why your pug might quickly switch to open mouth breathing at the slightest stimulation. Is this problem easily corrected too, Esther?
Alas, no. You can do laser removal of some of these abnormal turbinates, but you need rhinoscopy and laser equipment, which often isn't available in general practice. Remember, rhino means nose, so a rhinoscope is a scope or camera on a stick that goes up the nose.
Third, we have a long, soft palate. Your hard palate is the roof of your mouth. The soft palate is the bit of tissue that extends caudally or backwards from this. When you swallow, your soft palate moves upwards and blocks off the back of your nose. So your soy latte goes down the right hole and not back out of your nostrils.
Which may or may not be stenotic.
Exactly.
I'm just thinking of you squirting soy latte out of your nose. Still an amazing image in my head.
Yeah, it'll be a chai soy latte, actually.
Okay, all right. Again, it's like the normal size soft palate has been placed into a brachycephalic skull. The palate is too long and hangs down into the entrance of the windpipe. As you can imagine, this interferes with breathing, causing that characteristic snoring, particularly when sleeping because all the muscles are relaxed, or maybe when it's excited because there is higher airflow into the lungs.
Vibrating back and forth in the larynx means it collects a lot of saliva and becomes inflamed. So then we have a soft palate that is long and thick, which precipitates the problem.
There are two surgical methods to correct this. The first is a soft palate resection, which shortens the palate. A newer technique is called a palatoplasty, where the palate is shortened and thinned. Billy the Bulldog will need to be fed soft food for the next few days after surgery as to not disturb the stitches, which again are dissolvable.
Fourth, the tonsils may be enlarged, in which case surgical removal or tonsillectomy may be required. They also have disproportionately large tongues, which we can't really do anything about.
And fifth, we must also check to see if the laryngeal saccules are everted. The laryngeal saccules are a little pocket on each side of the larynx, which is at the start of the trachea. Brachies often have a hypoplastic or narrowed trachea. If you're trying to get air through a narrow tube, the airflow or air pressure becomes really high.
It's like putting the same amount of water through a large drain pipe versus a garden hose. The water will trickle through the pipe, but squirt out under high pressure through the hose.
That's right. So with increased flow in the trachea, these laryngeal saccules can pop out. They essentially turn inside out, like if the pockets on your pants turn inside out in the wash. And then they sit in the airways, causing more obstruction, collecting saliva, and becoming more and more inflamed. When this happens, we just snip them off.
So they're not really needed?
Better out than in these cases.
Everted laryngeal saccules are actually considered the first stage of laryngeal collapse. Once all the cartilage around the larynx has collapsed, the prognosis is really poor.
The only thing you can and should do is identify bolus and make the surgical corrections beforehand to prevent us getting to this stage.
What other anesthetic or surgical considerations are there with the surgery, Esther? Like, is it particularly risky surgery or not?
Yes and no. So the actual surgical procedures are much less complicated than, say, a spay. But we are tampering with the airways. So complications such as bleeding and swelling of the airway can be much more serious than, say, of the scrotum. In addition, because of all the factors listed above, any anesthesia of any brachycephalic carries a higher risk compared to a healthy, non-brachycephalic dog. In particular, we are talking about the perioperative period, so before the ET tube goes in and after the ET tube comes out. So we need to be extra vigilant with these patients.
Worst case scenario, apart from death, I suppose, a tracheostomy tube may need to be placed. This is when we put a tube directly into the trachea through an incision into the skin under the neck. Have you had to do this much in practice, Esther?
Not really. Emergency vets will do these for various reasons more often. I have seen it in a non-bolus patient once, but touch wood, I haven't had to do a tracheostomy in my patients. And my old boss, who has done many more years of these surgeries, hasn't had to either.
Well, let's hope it stays that way then.
Mm-hmm. Please. So we don't want to sound doom and gloom, but it's not all sunshine and rainbows either. I ensure the client understands the risks, but also explain that by doing the bolus surgery, it is making subsequent anesthesias safer.
And improving quality of life, right? Like they're much less likely to get heat stroke, and their exercise tolerance improves dramatically, and their quality of sleep also improves because they don't suffer from sleep apnea-like problems.
And the owner's quality of life also improves. I've had many owners say, "Ugh, now we're both sleeping through the night. Previously, he'd keep me awake with his super loud snoring."
Benefits for the whole family.
Or actually, in some cases where I'm too confident and I ask, "Oh, so it means you must be sleeping better too, right?" And they're like, "No, we're actually sleeping terribly because he's too quiet and we wake up and can't hear him breathe and we think he's dead."
You can't win.
Nope.
Do we want to mention any other common issues in pugs slash Frenchies or bulldogs?
I'd love to, and we should, but we should do it quickly in the interest of time.
Okay, quick fire round. Let's go. Problem: facial fold dermatitis from too much floppy skin. Solution: frequent cleaning with antibacterials and facelift surgery if severe.
Problem: entropion. Skin hairs rubbing on the corneas, again from excess facial folds. Solution: corrective surgery, not just eye drops.
Problem: regurgitation or reverse sneezing. This is actually BOS related due to a negative pressure on the thorax. Solution: BOS surgery and or medications like omeprazole.
Hey, you're forgetting the A. Boas.
Oh, dang it. I'll do it again. Problem: regurgitation or reverse sneezing. This is actually BOAS related due to negative pressure in the thorax. Solution: BOAS surgery and or medications like omeprazole.
Problem: tail fold dermatitis from tight screw tails. Solution: frequent cleaning if mild or tail amputation if severe.
Time's up.
Good going. Let me catch my breath.
Okay, and while you do that, I'll recap brachiocephalic obstructive airway syndrome, or BOAS. This describes abnormalities in the airway, which result in snorting or snoring, exercise intolerance, and inefficient cooling. This dramatically increases the risk of heat stroke and laryngeal collapse. BOAS surgery involves widening of the nostrils, shortening plus minus, thinning of the soft palate, removal of the tonsils and laryngeal saccules if required, and laser removal of nasal turbinates if possible.
You'll find that some vets and practices will do this surgery and others won't, or they'll refer to specialists. It's a mixed bag and a cutting-edge developing scene. Some vets are not so aware of the issues or haven't been trained in how to perform the surgeries. Many owners are not aware and don't seek advice until it's too late. We perform BOAS surgeries on a frequent basis at my clinics, and it's super rewarding. My nurses play an important role in highlighting the issue and risks and benefits of the surgery to clients from the moment they come in for their puppy check or vaccinations. So my hope is that all our Nuggets listeners will be able to do the same and thus help improve the welfare of these dogs.
Absolutely. Out of interest, what's a ballpark figure, cost-wise for one of these surgeries?
Yeah, of course, it varies with how much we're doing and the technique used, and whether another procedure, most commonly a spay or castrate, is being performed at the same time. I'd say you're looking at not less than $1,000 to $1,500 Australian dollars in general practice, and up to $4,000 to $5,000 with a specialist. And I mean, I always say you pay for what you get in general. So at a referral centre, you have specialist surgeons operating, and they might want to put Freddie Frenchie through the CT scanner first, and that's probably a couple of thousand at least, and keep him overnight for monitoring before sending him home, etc. So you can't really compare apples with oranges, but that's kind of the cost that you're looking at.
Yeah, but it's still a sum that might make some owners think twice. Increasing the awareness of potential owners is important too. Hopefully, what we've discussed today makes people carefully consider whether these breeds are the right choice for their family.
Exactly. So feel free to share this podcast, and in particular this episode, with your colleagues and friends and family, especially those who are considering adopting or purchasing a new dog.
And follow us on Instagram for our latest pictures and links.
So Marcus, it's been a while since we heard about your adventures. Last time you told us about your moving trip to Ukraine, and now you said you're back in Jordan continuing on your camel project. So what other tales do you have to tell us from over there?
Well, I could talk about camels, but instead I want to tell you about what a stupid tourist I was.
Okay.
Because I was with my wife, Anna, and she was wanting me to take some pictures of her in the desert. So I was like, what can possibly go wrong, right? Seems like a pretty standard thing to do. So anyway, we're out in the desert. We pull over the car, find this kind of nice looking spot with some mountains in the background. And there was kind of some buildings like off to the side a little bit. And I didn't think too much of it, but in the back of my head, I was like, I wonder what they are. And so anyway, we're for about like 20 minutes. I'm just taking pictures of her. She's standing up on this like pile of rocks in her like nice white dress and
Oh, like the one that you first saw her in.
exactly. I don't think it was the exact same one, but similar long flowing dress. And she's looking beautiful. Everything's going nicely. And then I'm starting to feel a little bit uneasy because I start to think those buildings over there, like they kind of vaguely look like they could be some kind of military base. But I wasn't really convinced because they still just look like a bunch of buildings. So I said to Anna, I was like, maybe we should leave. I'm not really sure like where we are. And she was like, okay. So I went back to the car. But she kept the camera, and I got in the car, and she was kind of like taking. It was really funny. She was like taking pictures of her feet, and like looking into the camera, and then I was like looking at her, and then suddenly, like I looked outside the window of my car, and this army truck had pulled up like against my car, and all of these soldiers got out and surrounded my car, and they had these like massive assault rifles. And they weren't like pointing them in my face or anything. They were like just holding them, but they were standing around the car. And then I started shouting to Anna. I was like, Anna, Anna, come back. And she like took her face out of the camera and then just looked up to see all the soldiers around the car. And she came back over and I like told her just get in the car. And then they took the camera off me and took both of our passports. And they're like, what are you doing? This is a military base. Like, why are you taking photos of a military base? And like, they thought we were spies or something. And I was like, no. I was just taking pictures of her, and they couldn't speak English, so they couldn't really understand what I was saying because they were speaking
So,
Arabic.
well, you were speaking Arabic too then, or Google was.
No, I was just like trying to. At that point, I probably only knew 5 or 10 words in
And
Arabic.
they weren't like, no, we are not spies.
No, I didn't know the word for not spies. But I was just pointing at her and just saying
Not
like,
spy.
it's of yeah, she's a spy, I'm not. No, but they took the camera and they went through all the pictures and they saw that they were all of her. And then they like got on their walkie-talkies and called another guy over that could speak
Okay.
English, and we managed to figure it out after about like 15 minutes. Finally they gave us our passports back and just told us like, don't come here again. And I was like, I won't, please let me go. Then I just drove away like, oh my gosh. Because I literally thought we were going to get detained. So thanks God, they just figured we were just stupid tourists.
Thank you, God.
Yeah. So just keeping my head down from now, staying out of trouble, just do my vet work.
Not very inconspicuous spies, though, like Anna in like a white flowing dress posing on a
I
rock.
know, right? I know. I That helped. That definitely helped.
So, note to all you nurses, single nurse ladies out there, wearing a white dress can get you married, and it can also get you out of really sticky situations when there are rifles being pointed at your spouse.
Exactly.
Sounds like you've been having heaps of adventures over there. I'm sure you've got lots more to tell us, but why don't we wrap it up and see you next time?
Yeah, we'll see you next time.